Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later. Hello and welcome to the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast. I am today's host, Helen Gould, and with me I have...
Ben Meredith.
Bryn Monroe.
Lydia Nicholas.
And Helen Gould.
No! I defy... What?
Helen, why did you invite this guy on?
Oh, sorry,
Helen,
sorry.
We actually recast
Alex Newell,
you.
Hello, yes. I'm Alex, force of habit, it's fine.
Fine. That makes it sound like you say my name along with me.
I have a whole life you don't know about, Helen, but you really should. You really, really should.
Well, speaking of boundaries...
best segue ever. Flawless. Mm.
So today, as I presume you will know from the title... we are going to talk about relationships in our gaming podcast, because it turns out that since I came on, the relationship content has gone skyrocketing up. So we decided we should probably talk about it. Also, several people have asked us things, so we may as well make it actual stuff you can listen to. That's my introduction to the
content.
Show.
Content. Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect.
We have 9 questions. We're going to see if we can get through them all. So short and snappy, everybody. None of us have a tendency to ramble. So this should be easy. This is a question for us all in general. And it goes like this. Do you discuss in advance where a relationship might go or who/what they might be into? Do we talk off-screen about the direction we want to take in relationships, or do we just go with whatever happens in role play? And I mean, any of us can answer that, because it's just...
combination of both, really. Yeah. It's very, very deeply contextual.
I'll confess, I was a little bit unprepared for the Zolf Wild combination. I should have been a bit more prepared. It came about very naturally, and that's one where it came about, from my perspective, it came out initially through RP, and then I was like, we should talk about this.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It was like a natural, oh yeah, these two have been like in the campaign and had a enemies to lovers arc. So yeah. When we got like 2/3 of on that arc, we're like, is this where it's going? Let's have a chat about where we're comfortable letting it go.
Yeah, because I admit, for that one, you know what I did? I did the awful, they're just good friends thing in my head, and then went, of course they're not. Come on. How old are you, Alex? Are you 12? Come on.
It's the kind of thing that, like, we can all see ourselves doing for ourselves, like, where you don't realize that you're flirting with someone until, like, wait a second. Wait. What?
That's exactly how it felt. That is exactly how it felt.
It has happened in real life several times where I've been like, oh, wait, are we going out for drinks or are we going out for drinks?
So yeah, the second that I was aware there was a thing, I think we did trigger into, okay, we should, you know, start to actually like, not plot, that's very, very different, but start to be like, okay, cool, what are we like interested in telling us a story? What are we not? What are the boundaries here? What is on and off the cards, that kind of thing. But it was only after that sort of had already started a little bit.
I would say we do very limited planning, because that makes it sound like you're kind of sketching out a direction. And what we do is you know, when that one, it sort of caught people by surprise a bit. But certainly Alex has, at appropriate points in the storyline, just been, what are people open to?
Yeah.
In the next 20 to 30 episodes. Like, and so the pre thing, the pre kind of happening stuff, is about establishing boundaries and interest. And then once something starts to happen through role play, we then do discuss out of character once it's begun a bit. So it's not, it's you know, we don't, it's sort of a, the planning happens in real time.
It's very like dating app kind of thing, right? Where there is a bit of like, this is my settings for like what I want to see. And then there's like, does the chemistry actually emerge?
Yeah.
And then somewhere along that journey, once chemistry has been established and the practicalities of, remember, in this situation, you're on a dating app while also trying to save the world. So you are busy. Like, while the practicalities and the chemistry are being established, you then have to at some point, although personally I avoid that usually far too long, you then have a conversation about, so is this a thing? And,
yeah,
you know,
exactly,
if so, what do we want? It's that art.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also one of those things where you might personally think to yourself, huh, I think there could be something here. Let me role play it a bit. And if it doesn't go that way, then that's fine. Like, like when Kiko was introduced, I was like, interesting. But I didn't think I am definitely going to romance this person. I think I was still thinking about Barnes at the time. And I was just like, two potentials.
Yeah.
But that's the worth mentioning as well, is that kind of temperature check that Bryn was talking about.
Yeah.
That happened prior to the airship. Is the airship, it was like, look, there's going to be an airship arc and we're going to be traveling for a while. What do people want in that? And there were a few things around there where someone was like, you know what? A murder mystery could be fun, you know, Murder on the Orient Express style, but an airship, or this could be fun, or that could be fun. But the one thing that I got from everyone was more relationship-based stuff. Like, we're not had the opportunity to have any kind of longevity with an NPC around, and there's not much compatibility for non-NPC-based relationships within this group. So as a result, it kind of felt like everyone was pushing in that direction. And then once we brought it up, everyone was like, yes!
And
yes!
Interestingly, I would say I declared Hamid to be open to those possibilities from super early in the podcast. I remember I've having mentioned it, you know, to some point to Alex, you know, in the first dozen episodes, again in the, you know, in the sort of the 30s, that it was something I'd be interested in role playing through for Hamid. But Hamid's never really found the chemistry with any NPCs, and that happens. No. It hasn't happened, and that's fine. But
well, it's why you had the date with Whoizits in Paris.
Yeah,
because right? That was like, oh, well, an opportunity for a romance, and it just didn't pan out.
Didn't really work out. That's okay. But like, you know, I think I love Lyd's dating app metaphor, because it's Hamid has been open and available and potentially even looking, but just hasn't matched, and that's fine. That happens.
With that in mind, there is a specific question here, which is, if Hamid's date with Madeline had gone well, would she have ended up part of the party? What do you reckon?
I can answer that in that it defines how you define party. It's not like there would have been a fifth member kicking around at all times, but I think certainly I would have engineered opportunities for her to keep reoccurring in a way that could help things progress.
I can definitely tell you, even if Alex won't admit it to himself, she wouldn't have joined the party on their travels. What it would have meant is there'd be another emotional hook that Hamid left behind in Paris that Alex would have used to put me through more torture.
No. You want to know what that arc would have been? Because I have a pretty clear idea, to be honest, is I'd have had Madeline disappear for a while and then come back very intimidatingly capable, and see if Bryn could handle the, not Bryn, sorry, see if Hamid could handle the dynamic shift. Because that first date was a little bit like, oh, I've been doing all these massive things. Madeline was like, wow, okay, fair play. I'd be really interested in coming back and going, what have you been up to? I've done this and this. And Madeline being like, cool, I've done this, 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 this. Nice, I'm still super into you, let's go. And watch Hamid just be like, there is a shift happening here. But like, that's what leaps out to me as an opportunity, as an example. But it wouldn't have been just Madeline around the whole time.
Look, you've used every other character that Hamid has ever had an emotional connection to inflict horrible experiences.
But that's why I wouldn't on this one, because Hamid's stuff has been so... I think it's actually one of the reasons there's been a paucity of, like, dating options for Hamid, I guess, is a lot of Hamid's story arc has been family-based. Like, if you actually dig into the core, like... Again, like inside out styles, a lot of the core memory side of Hamid is a lot of family based stuff. So that sort of precludes a lot of that. And it can run very false if you start pushing that kind of thing, especially in the family stuff that Hamid's been dealing with. Those opportunities are not very compatible for Hamid, unfortunately, up to the point where most of the human race was not on the cards. Well, human race, any sure, sentient species.
Sure. It's the kind of thing that we are doing a podcast which moves quite fast, so you can't be running too many emotional arcs at once.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, we're not doing just one thing at once because we are multiple people. Alex is keeping track of lots of things in his head about what our arcs might be, but we've also got kind of, you know, like, Zulf has relationships with Wild and a relationship journey with Hamid, and he's working through the loss of Sasha and all those sorts of, like, you've got loads of character arcs going on at once, but there are some things where, like, you can't have two major ones. Alex said it already better than I did. There's, you know.
No, I know. I know what you mean.
Too much at once could just be like, I'm now going to have a mental shutdown day.
Well, it's also a symptom of the medium, where it's like, if I had thought, you know what, I'm going to write a book about these characters going on this kind of blah, 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 there would have been loads of that kind of thing. Yeah. But it's not. We're following a story of a bunch of professional murderers traveling the world.
Cell still has not killed, I think, anyone who wasn't a zombie.
But here's the thing. I would still class this as a professional murder group. It just is. I'm sorry. In terms of how it operates, it is an international murder carnival, which is fine. Like, that's grand. But it's very difficult to make any kind of relationship stick when that's kicking around. So as a result, there's just not that much chance.
Well, see, it's the other thing as well of because we have a sort of globe-trotting pulpy adventure podcast, unless you add to a growing caravan of NPCs, which we kind of did with the ship, but if you have too many relationships, caravan, you will grind the, because you'll anchor it too much
to a location. Situation,
especially because this is a universe in which you can't just have a phone call or go on the internet, which you could run in a more modern setting of having a correspondence. But with this, it's like telepathy and sending, which is much more of a big deal than, you know, just having a chat.
Yeah.
And also, let's be honest, let's take a moment here and consider. Let's say that every single member of the party got into a long-term relationship, okay? Not with each other. I personally am now sustaining 4 long-term relationships on top of all of the actual mechanical requirements of the NPC.
Yeah, and Grizzop also had that. It just didn't come up. So he was maintaining a relationship just in the background.
But all I'm getting at here is that the kind of screen time, more craft-based rather than life-based, which is the amount of screen time required for it to be a relationship rather than just a stake. It's the problem with the action movie. Oh no, they've taken my wife, who I've never mentioned before now, and I have literally had no screen time with. And if you were to put her in front of you, you wouldn't recognise her as my wife, because we've spent no screen time. But look, a picture, so you know the stakes are high. That's how it comes across, unless you actually have proper, dedicated time. And like Ben says, that kind of grinds it to a halt. So it's one of those oddities where RPG for performance versus RPG for play, wildly different. I think there would have been so much more if this was just a game amongst friends. A lot more.
Ben, this isn't technically a question that's been written down, but I'm pretty sure that all the fans' ears just perked up when you said Grizzop did have a relationship?
Mm-hmm.
What?
That's Vesic.
Do you want to... Ah?
It's Vesic. All right, yeah, I mean, because obviously he's long, long dead, millennia dead. So, yeah, I mean, because the message he sent, the letter he sent when he sent all of that money back was to Vesic, because him and Vesic had effectively adopted a clutch in Berlin, and while he was out adventuring, he was sending the money back to Vesic, which is why...
Co-parents, effectively.
Yeah, which is why... You know, obviously Vesic was the one who was kidnapped, and why Grizzop was, you know, very upset not to do it and then did and died. thanks, Azu and Hamid.
Lies.
So that's the whole thing. That was the long-term relationship. And it just didn't have a chance to come up because the time that it was going to happen, obviously Grizzop mucked up the role and disappeared.
Literally. And because we were starting to lay the groundwork for that in terms of that stuff at the campfire and with the messages and so on. If Grizzop had been hanging around, there'd have been a little more examination of that. But yeah, I suppose canonically speaking, then there is a Grizzop clutch in the world with Vasik still kicking around.
Well, obviously. Also, I'd just like to point out, Alex, you just poo-pooed the whole action movie cliche of someone's been kidnapped, look at the picture, oh, now you know it's my wife, so there are snakes. That's literally what Grizzop did.
That's the problem 100%. With Grizzop dying, yep. Because what I was going to do is have a nice, long examination of that after the fact and be like, who's this person? Oh, look about that, I don't know.
I'm going to look at the face of God.
Welcome to the medium. Never, ever, if you ever want to create anything of beauty, do an RPG.
Yeah, it got messy. Thanks for that, though.
It will exist and it will be a thing, but it will never be what you plan.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Thanks, Ben, because I legitimately didn't know any of that.
Yeah,
that's absolutely news to me.
It never got the chance to come off, and it was stuff that me and Ben had discussed. It's a good example of a narrative cul-de-sac where it's because of the way the pieces fell, there's just no way to explore that properly without completely bending everything else out of shape to accommodate it. There's quite a lot of them in gaming, but quite disguised if you're not on the inside looking out.
I thought the big mystery for Sasha was who her parents are, but never found that out.
I know people have wondered and speculated, but it sort of didn't become a plot point, even though it was an open mystery.
You know, I wrote that in as that's a nice hook. And the way Alex is looking, it's like, that might still come up. But or at least is not willing to let that go. But I mean, I specifically write backstories with a lot of open things that are mysteries to the characters.
Can't discuss that until the series finishes.
Amazing.
But we definitely should when it does.
I would say from what's in text, it definitely feels the meeting Eldarion kind of felt a little bit like, obviously she's not Sasha's.
Yeah, there was,
parents,
I'm sure, supposed to be loads of plot dump or exposition. And Sasha was like, no!
But I think we got a nice vibe for it to be satisfying without having to be let's have a conversation about specifics.
I would say there was a version where Eldarion was still kicking around after the fact. That wasn't a script. That wasn't a computer game scripted. This character is never going to make it, no matter what a telltale decision you make. There was a version where Eldarion could have been kicking around, but it just didn't happen.
Would have been hilarious. Eldarion was kicking around, but Sasha wasn't.
Yeah.
Take a moment and consider it. Yeah. I'd have definitely made a big whole rivalry thing in the background between Einstein and Eldarion, because they're both long-distance travel people who have completely different approaches to life.
Yeah.
But stuff doesn't come off. Okay.
That's the enemies to friends thing that we'll never see.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Well, Lyd, do you mind if we stick with you a little bit? So the question is written is, what led to Liz's decisions not to have romance for Sasha versus Sel being very up for romantic encounters?
Mm-hmm.
Especially because Sel had past relationships, which isn't very common in TTRPGs. And I think you have answered both of those questions separately, but not in a comparative.
It really comes down to, I was the only female presenting person in a group of blokes, and I had done quite a lot of improv previously, looking for groups after Fat Kitten had broken up, and working with groups where I had some quite bad experiences about being pushed to do roles where you're either the mother, the love interest, or a sex worker, and none of those getting particular respect. That's what I say. I don't think that I don't think there's anything wrong with being a mother, a love interest, or a sex worker, but I don't want those to be the only rules up for me, and particularly not when they are all treated with disrespect. So that was just exhausting in a few groups, and so I specifically at the beginning made that a rule. Partly, I just didn't want to. So we say that everyone was friends, but I didn't know Ben or Alex really before it started. And when I had worked with Bryn and James before, it had been in a group that was very deliberately 50-50 male-female. with gender non-conforming and queer identities within that. But like, it was very, it was trying to be balanced. It wasn't even about not trusting. It was about having, I just didn't want to deal with that, having Absolutely. Had a bunch of bad experiences. Mm. It also, as I went through, so I think I've said before, like I see very much, I don't think of myself as a very good actor. So I have to have like characters be versions of stuff that I can imagine for myself or versions of, myself, like I have so much respect, particularly for like Ben's way of creating characters from yeah. like a core impulse, and then like, well, and they have nothing to do with
Ben
who
creates
he is.
Characters based entirely on what is the way he can next assault my vision.
Pretty much, but like, it's so cool and it's so different from how I have ever done any kind of performance, let alone improv. Because yeah, so I couldn't work. I don't know if I have that capability to that kind of level of like theory of mind to imagine what would a person who thinks mainly about these are their two priorities and everything else is around and build a whole person then imagine what they could do. So I saw Sasha as quite young and quite traumatized and also quite busy. And so it felt like anything that would work for her would not work for the podcast format. Like
yeah.
she needed yeah. time. She needed things to kind of build up from awkward jokes and smiles and like showing off in front of one another and gradually feeling safe. Like so I thought and that didn't fit with the kind of world and experiences that she was having right then. I never saw her as asexual, even though I wasn't going to do relationships on screen. But yeah, I don't think it's there's any value in the moment of like canonizing what her sexuality is or in what form it like might take. And me saying, oh, she would need things to build up slowly over time also doesn't mean that I necessarily saw her as like demisexual or how some people kind of construct that, because that was a situational thing. You know, she'd lost a lot of trust and so needed to rebuild that. Whether that was something inherent to her or something that would last a lifetime, I don't know, you know, because it could be that having chilled out for a while and seen the kids grow up, maybe she'd be like be in a completely different headspace. So all of those things, I think, like whatever works for your headspace kind of work. Yeah. And with Cell, I, having done Sasha, who was kind of quite traumatized and was working through things for the first time, I had started doing quite a lot of work in like researching care and how society manages networks of care. And I was just really interested in the idea of having someone that had a big, long past full of different kinds of relationships, not all of which have an immediate bearing on what they're doing at any one moment. You know, it's not relevant to a lot of what they're doing that they might have had this like ex-fiance or that like late husband or, you know, all sorts of different connections and lots of regrets about family and culture and things. And like loads of it built up in my head about how their life would have been in the different places they've been and what they've done. But it amuses me that whatever they're going through at any particular point may not be, it's not the most dramatic thing that's happened to Cell. You know, it's like, oh, we're seeing this enormous beast. I mean, it's probably top five beasts I've seen, you know.
But I always think of them in slightly different terms. Sasha was a knife that was honed by her past. Cell is more strated.
Yeah.
And that's a very different approach for both of them, which wasn't accidental on your part. And it leads to it means that as a GM, you engage with it very differently, very, very differently.
They are. And I can imagine that it would be the sort of thing where if a relative or a chunk from the past of Cells, say, had been taken and kidnapped in the way that, you know, the other party members were in Rome, they are old and they've got complicated relationships. They think a lot about what, you know, a personal sacrifice might mean compared to what you do for a community. And they might well say, we need to get on with saving the world. They might have been very much more on Grizzop's kind of side there. It would have been very different, not because they don't care, but because like It's like the difference between the sort of love that you fall in at 30 and the sort of love you fall in at 15. Like, they're not less love, but like...
it manifests differently.
Exactly. There's yeah. And it's not even that, and they might be less intense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So also very, very quickly, because I will not let a compliment go unreciprocated, I would say that your real skill, Lyd, in basically everything you've been talking about is your real skill. You've got like an incredible eye for detail and nuance within the backstories that you create and the characters you create, even if they are aspects of yourself, as you say. Like, there's so much going on.
There's lots of parts of being a good actor, and you are definitely a good actor, and your ability to convey emotion and complexity and nuance, as Ben said, are all outstanding. So,
I think there've been some, like, the fact we've all got very different performance styles.
Yeah.
Mm.
It means that it's often just such a joy, because, like, you know that whatever you throw out there, one of the others is going to kind of pick up and do something completely different with it.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes people's reactions to what is going on, what another person throws out, I'm just like, how, why, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then I realize that, like, you're thinking about characters and how they act in the world and how you move through the story in, like, different ways. And it's a joy and an honor working with all of you. Yay.
Aww. On that lovely
gross
note.
Mm.
We'll take a gross and disgusting break. Are very nice to each other for 30 seconds.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And welcome back to the Relationship Metacast. Right, I'm going to go back to a more general question, because I know my answer, but I'm interested to see other people's answers, which is, does your own identity and experience influence the in-game relationships that you have, or do you try to keep it super, super separate because it would be weird, basically?
If I may, I'd quite like to jump in on this one from an odd perspective.
Yeah, because we have relationship, all of us have relationships with you, so tell us about that. Yeah.
So this aspect of the game is probably the thing I struggle with most. And this is gonna make people laugh, but it's true, which is, I am a married man. Yes. I am wildly, wildly inexperienced when it comes to relationships and dating. I think I've been on a date in my life. Like, with Hannah, like, we started to get together and I went, Can I be your boyfriend?
Oh,
at which point Hannah says,
yeah,
that would be nice. And I went, great, that's really good. And then we were boyfriend and girlfriend. And I asked that at 25. Like, this is how you do it at age 12. I'm wildly inexperienced, like wildly, wildly inexperienced on this aspect of basically like life. Mm. Don't get me wrong, this isn't me hankering for things I haven't had at all. But what that means is there's an enormous amount of nuance that's required in terms of engaging with these elements of relationships that, from a GM perspective, require me to wear a lot of hats I have literally no touchstone for whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to, do you research that? Do you ask people that you know? Like, good example that will make Lydia laugh is...
oh, the Barnes line.
Yeah,
I knew freezing was you, not Barnes.
Yeah, I was freezing and was like, okay, thank goodness it makes sense that Barnes would also freeze. But that was Alex just going, give me a second while I check my human interaction directory.
Yeah,
nothing. Okay, cool. No one has ever flirted with me in my entire life. What? I don't know what to do with this.
It was
I felt like I should have warned you before.
No, potentially.
You could have had Barnes be like, hey, your skin doesn't look that bad on you as well. Wait, shit.
But this is a good example of my point where it's like, my relationships in my life do, where it's like I have a much better in terms of an examination of the family side. I come from a pretty large, like, robust clan with a lot of different, like, elements at play, so it makes the Hamid side of things much easier for me, because it's like, cool, great, yeah, I know family politics and da-da-da-da-da. But, yeah, when it comes to the romantic side, I'm wildly inexperienced, so I think it's the one I've misstepped most often, and it's certainly the one where I've flown a little bit by the seat of my pants as I guess how people do this.
I don't think you've misstepped at all, and I think that you have a really good, like, just from my knowledge of you as a person, I think you've got a really good twin set of a strong sense of what I would call empathy, which is that I feel like you can think, well, if these things are important to this person, this is how they would react, and also a really good sense of narrative and story beats. So I think it works out for you.
But that narrative and story beats is a good point, where it's like, oh, I can tell you what makes sense for a story in relation. That's fine, no worries. But the second that anyone comes at me with something vaguely like organic and baked in the moment, as opposed to a, you know, scripted line, I'm a little bit thrown.
But there's a reason why those exist. Why those that knowledge of romantic story beats exists, because they do happen. Obviously, in real life, everything is so much more messy than anything we can do, even in a TTRPG, which is already so messy.
I was terrified playing Kiko the whole time.
Oh, honey! Oh.
I don't know what a date is. You're like, he was like, oh, Kiko will take you on a date. What's a date?
It was perfect.
Dates have food and fun. I think.
Play chess by marbles, that's it.
Play chess by marbles. That is an Alex bona fide date. Play chess by marbles. Like,
I'm also interested, Bryn, in your response to this, because you started out wanting Hamid to be a playboy and then abandoned so fast. I mean, but... So, like, what? And you're not a playboy.
I mean, so, for me, this is... I mean, I have now been playing RPGs pretty regularly for closer to 25 years than 20. Wow. And I have played so many characters over that time period, and some for long periods, some for short periods, but also, you know, I love it. One of the reasons I love it is getting to explore different characters and different character arcs and different... And so every character I create, you know, is a different level of similarity to me. So I think that there's essentially something very true to what Lyd says about you have to take at least a little bit of yourself into any given character, I think.
But
for me, it's, you know, every character, that's a kind of a different calculation of how much of myself do I bring into them and what aspect. And so, you know, I've played a lot of characters in my life that are scientists and have, you know, an attitude to science that's roughly similar to mine. And, you know, so... In terms of my own identity experience, for Hamid and his attitude to relationships, I would say that is probably the way that Hamid is most similar to me. And that's the bit of myself, apart from a slightly privileged, though not nearly as privileged as Hamid background. You know, that is a bit that for Hamid I brought in from myself very much so. So I'd say Hamid's attitude and decisions in relationships and to the relationships he has do mirror my own pretty closely, but that's not like a principle that I stick to. It's just that happened with this specific character, and you know, other characters, and you know, it's weird because I've now been playing Hamid 6 years, and obviously, you know, he's changed a lot in that time, and I've changed quite a bit too, I would say. But but I think there's the other aspect to that, which is feeding, therefore, especially if you do make that choice to take those relationships perspective of your own, is not feeding back interactions the character has to yourself. So, you know, obviously there's been so much antagonism between me and Ben at times, and at times our characters have got on very well, but it's been very important to both of us that hasn't fed into our real life relationship. And, you know, I've become, you know, I would say, at least from my perspective, me and Ben have become very good friends over the last 6 years. And I'm putting him on the spot now, so you can't really contradict that. Even though he's shaking his head in the video call, and I'm pretending not to see. But yeah, so, you know, I haven't wanted that. And so there have been, after some of the most tense episodes, there have been little check-ins between the two of us to check that we're both feeling okay about it. And we are. But I would say that, you know, I didn't know you, Helen, when you joined the podcast, but I would say that Hamid and Azu's friendship has helped me feel like much better friends with you. And I think that would have happened anyway, because, of, like I said, of the way I've become friends with Ben after not knowing him 6 years ago. But weirdly, you know, when it's a positive thing like that, it's not a problem if you let it feed into your real life relationship a bit too.
I also think that not only are our characters quite similar in sort of their love languages and stuff, but also you and I, our improv styles are kind of similar, I think.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
because, like, I rarely go into any situation thinking, unless I have been pre-warned, unless I have an idea, okay, this is going to be tense or this is going to take care, I rarely have any idea what Azu is going to say or do or react to.
Yeah.
And I suspect, though you always have a plan in terms of combat, I think that you also are quite fluid in your role-playing.
I would hope so. I try to be.
Yeah. Ben, I also want to ask you about this because we've said that Zolf and Grizzop are like such strong characters like by themselves. I want to obviously apply the same question to you, but also like probably we should talk a bit more about Zolf and Wild too. Do you have any of your experiences in these characters? Because they seem so like full and real.
I don't know. It's not something that I've... But like in a genuine way, I've not like really properly sat down and planned it out. You know, that's an aspect of them that I've just kind of felt it out.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, broadly, they do not have my identity as a cisgender heterosexual man.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know, to be honest. I don't really have a nice succinct answer. It's just playing through the characters and feeling out what's right at the time.
Yeah. I think that's super, super valid too. Like, just to be clear, like, we all know each other, but just to be completely, there are no wrong answers here.
Yeah.
That is incorrect, Alan. I don't know. Thinking about the Zolf Wild thing, it always shocks me. There's a lot of me in Wild, but not in the relationship side. There's just not. It doesn't work like that. There's a lot of me in Wild's consideration of responsibility and his responsibilities to other people and other people's responsibilities to each other. I'd say there's a little bit of an examination of that there. But I actually really struggle with the Wild-Zolf relationship in, again, making it work at my end because, again, wildly inexperienced. And you were talking about love languages earlier, Helen. Zolf as a personality type relative to Alex, not relative to Wild, is quite alien to me. It's not something I have much personal connection with. I don't know, it's just that personality makeup is not something that I connect easily with. So as a result, I'd say that the Wild Zolf one's probably been a bit more work. That implies that it's just been like forcing it, and that's not the case.
No, I think it happened very naturally.
It requires a little bit more of a cerebral approach because I can't just rely entirely on instinct because I don't have good instincts with Zolf as a person, me, Alex, as a person. I can do the thing which is like, what would Wild do? That's easy. I can just go, whoop, boom, done. There we go. Wild is a code that I can just put on and do. That's fine. But I have to do that with Zolf because I just never, on a personal level, seem to get an in with Zolf the way that I have with certain other characters. But specifically in terms of relationships, it's unusual. It's peculiar.
Yeah. And I think it's worth mentioning that, like, when I, like, there is, it is on recording when I ask, what's going on here? What is going on?
Yeah.
That was the moment that it was actually, as far as I know, it was clarified. So you were both like, yeah, this is definitely deeper than just a friendship.
That's the first time in Alex's life that the conversation, what's going on here? Yeah, we should probably... because everything with me is like a formally instigated step-by-step procedure. So as a result, that one was literally me on audio for the first time going, I have to have one of those conversations. I don't know. How does one do this?
I would say, actually, sort of thinking about it a bit, is like the relationship side of things is probably the most difficult bit of playing Zolf because like Zolf is sort of a reflection of... basically my worst days.
Sure.
Which is why, I mean, I said, like, that's why I kind of left in the... like, also, not why I left, but why I pulled Zolf out in the first place, because I was like, no, this is getting a bit too much. Because effectively, he's me on a black dog day all the damn time.
Because he
is a very depressed person. And so the romance, because my automatic response when I'm feeling like that is to close in on myself and like not have any relationships as much as I can, then pushing for him to have a romantic relationship, which I think is also that evolution of my role play is also mirroring the fact like his evolution as a person and going like, no, I can't just isolate myself forever. I have to forge connections with other people. So I think like there is an element there, but it's like it is a conscious effort to put in the romance.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, it's not that it is a. It works. It does work as a romance. Absolutely. It does. It like it. It well, it, yeah. Just as a relationship in general, the connection is there, and the chemistry for all of their odd sparring does exist. Yeah. It's just like Ben says, it isn't effortless. But that's a lot of it is because Zolf is a character who is built behind walls
and is constantly fighting against himself.
Yeah, the drawbridge has to be manually lowered each time for that like connection to happen. Aww. And so that's something I'm personally very aware of, but I didn't know whether it was just me, so that's good to hear.
No, and it's one of the primary reasons with probably the Hamid Zolf like antagonisms is because it's that kind of thing, and Hamid's very good at making him put his guard back up.
Well,
accidentally
and
or no,
opposite, you know? Approaches.
Hamid's the exact opposite. Like, Hamid is so constantly open. Reaching for connection and broadcasting emotions and looking to have
worse.
Some of it get reflected. And it just doesn't. Him and Zolf are fundamentally incompatible personalities, basically.
Which is really interesting in that element of relationships, of also like having to work with somebody that you don't like.
Yeah.
But that's why the Zolf Wild thing works as well, is that what Zolf, the strength of Zolf's like way of doing that, though, is it allows Zolf to just sit there and weather the storm that is Wild's bullshit. Seriously, like, you can just take shelter behind those walls, let the actual nonsense blow past, and then a human, a person conversation can happen.
It's the same thing from the other way as well, is that Wild can weather Zolf's like foul moods and sort of like barbs, and like, I don't know, they're both very good at dealing with one another when they're difficult, and then like allowing each other the time to open back up.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's just, it caught me by surprise in a big way. I don't plan anything. I wasn't ready for that.
Me too. I wasn't expecting it. And then it just became apparent that was the situation.
And I think that is reflected in how Zolf and Wild are with each other. Because I think, like, as you role-played it, it was them suddenly becoming aware too.
Mm. Yeah.
I think there's a similar thing in what became like... I mean, to me, it was almost unexpected. The depth of grief that Zolf had for Sasha and the connection between them, which was more of a like mentor parent kind of thing, but one based on mutual respect. So it's not parental mental figure doesn't quite work like that, but it was like the fact that I think what she needed was like, I mean, I never thought it was that clear. Like it just like the, I think Sasha found Hamid a lot of work because he's always broadcasting emotions, and also like has, especially early on, remember, he's moved on a lot from that, but especially early on was less dissimilar than Bertie to like he has obviously changed a lot and revealed other sides of himself, but early on,
well, and learned as well, like he was so naive about the world.
That's their dynamic. Bertie's job was to sit there. They were both characters set to start from a place of almost unchecked privilege. Yeah. And then you have Bertie, who was like, you know what I'm going to do? Double down forever. Mm. And then you had Hamid, was the opposite side of that coin examination. Mm. So it makes sense that even factoring that in, that the connection with Sasha was never going to be simple.
No, whereas like her connection with Zolf, it's almost like someone that was closed off in a way that she was, and like trauma, shared trauma, obviously lots of battles together, shared competence. Mm. And like, and then again with Grizzop, like saw both of them like keep coming back to save. And like the idea, I think it was that, although there was like, she had a lot of fun with Azu and obviously began to feel like she was skilling up in comedy when it came to Wild, and so was like was able to make him laugh, and that was like a huge thing for her, that idea that like someone who seems closed off but keeps coming back and is there for you. It was like, actually, like I was almost, when Zolf left the room on the letter reading, that was just absolutely the right response. But once I saw that fan-made cinematic or animatic of it, and I was like, oh, that is just like somehow playing it in the moment. You're kind of busy, but seeing it back, I was just like, oh gosh, no, it was all there. Like there was so much depth and connection, and like there's so much grief there. Gosh, he really is grief-stricken, isn't he?
I've got to say, that is one thing that I'm kind of sad that we didn't get is more of Zolf and Sasha's relationship.
Seeing them, I can imagine
it had more potential.
Well,
it also helps that like Zolf reads as, for all of his faults, Zolf provided for Sasha what Sasha needed, which is Zolf reads steadfast. For everything else, Zolf reads very steadfast, and that was the one thing that had been forever denied Sasha.
And then like having, possibly for Zolf, having someone just like completely trust, or like to earn their trust over time, was like the kind of, not rely on them, but to know that that person completely trusts you. I can imagine.
Every previous relationship Zolf had either mucked up by killing them accidentally, or like consciously broken off, which arguably he did again, which is a regret for him.
But I think Zolf would be a much softer person if Sasha had still been around.
Yes.
Because that would have been a forged connection that would have weathered. It would have like stuck it out.
100%.
I think it would be a very different character.
He would be in a very different place if Sasha was still around.
I agree. Absolutely. I think probably in a much better place.
Oh, God, yeah. No, absolutely. That was really, like, that, like, him and Sasha's relationship was really, really good for him, and is probably
very important.
Like, why I decided to move him towards the Cleric of Hope sort of avenue.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, the heartrending.
Yeah. I have another question here that we haven't... So there have been...
Well, I don't want to move on from that one yet, Helen. Have answered it, really.
Yes.
There's one moment especially that stands out for me when you were talking about playing Azu as a bisexual and worried about, despite being bisexual yourself, being bad bisexual rep. And, you know, the question is about identity and experience and how it influences your own behavior. And I think that to me really stands out as a moment relevant to this question.
Yes, I forgot about me. yes, I always intended to play Azu as a bisexual because you don't get many black queer characters in general in media, and like it's a standard that all of my characters I play in TTRPGs are black anyway. It wasn't a choice that I made with like a whole like a massive it wasn't in sort of Ben terminology, it wasn't a hill that I put my flag on. I was just like, this is a thing that shall be accurate for my character. And also because God, I didn't know it at the time. I was like, this could go on for quite a while. I should play someone who is easy for me to play.
That's what they all say, Helen. That's what they all say in the beginning.
Yeah. So I was like, well, let me make her similar to me in ways that are quite fundamental to myself. And sexuality is something that's fundamental to me. And I was interested in just popping that in there.
Yeah.
Little bit of spice.
Can I ask a question?
TikTok. So, like, this whole session, you've just been dropping TikTok sounds. And you'd think we haven't noticed, but we have.
No, I know you've noticed. What was that, Alex?
So, I'll preface this with, I never would have explored this because of the power dynamic and so on, but I'm curious. Did Azu crush on the idea of fair hands in anything more than a professional ambition or not?
No.
And again, to be clear, I never would have examined that as a thing. The power dynamic is far too problematic, but
yeah, that
curious.
Would have been weird. No, for me, it was more of a, that is who I would like to be one day.
Understood.
That's mainly what that was.
I never even considered it before now, to be honest, but again, I tend to be quite oblivious to these things, so I thought I'd ask.
Yeah, that's my personal take on it. When I first started out, because the first thing that Azu does really is attempt to reach out physically to each of the people that she has suddenly met.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is very emblematic of her relationships with the LOL OMG jet party at the time. Like, Grizzop is sort of like, nope!
And Sash is also like finally!
No. Yes!
Someone who will hug me back!
And I thought in the back of my mind, huh? Hamid and Azu, But I really like the friendship that we've built up between those two now. I think they really get each other, even when they disagree so much. Because there is a conversation that Azu wants to have at some point about those kobolds still. But it just hasn't ever seemed like a good time. And also, I think Azu is scared of having conversations that might be relationship ending because relationships are very important to her. And I think that she sees all people as like people who I can have good relationships with or people who I can have no relationship with.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're not one, then you're going to get smited.
Right.
Sorry, that's a very different arrival for Azu in this scene, which is, oh, there's a sandstorm here, let me help you. No. Okay.
Bang!
Hook or smite. No in between.
Connecting up with that, one of the things, like, so Cell is non-binary. I have in the past described my gender as a woman with with a question mark and an exclamation mark. I have performed a lot in drag, and I very much wanted to play a character who is confidently non-binary as part of a process of exploring and thinking about my gender. And, like, I kind of thought that playing them would be, like, a step towards coming out, and it was actually, like, a really weird... Like, it's complicated, and people are complicated, but I kind of found that I didn't feel like that label worked completely for me. So, like, I use she and they pronouns, and it's for me, it has been very important to play that. It's almost like, these characters always come from a part of myself, but I do realize that there are a lot of things that I think about and get worried about because I am not a confidently out non-binary person. I am someone who is worried by their gender and has played with it in different forms and performed in different hats on. Yeah, well, with different hats on. Bryn knows because I literally performed a whole Edinburgh Fringe in drag as a Victorian gentleman with a top hat. So, like, literally in different hats.
Good times.
They were good times. So that is something that sometimes, like, I worry about, but I realize that has always come from me wanting to explore and enjoy and discover this character rather than like I do. You worry, of course, about, like, playing a character and so taking on an identity that isn't exactly your own. So that has been something that I agonized about once I realized that I wasn't going to be, like, confidently coming out in the same way, but instead just accepting that I live in the grey spaces and I'm working out what labels work for me. But I really hate labels, which means that it's hard to find a label that you like when you don't like any labels. You know how it is. Anyway, rambling, and we definitely shouldn't end the conversation on my rambling, but the bit of Cell that is just a massive flirt and has a lot of relationships in the past that some of which they treasure and some of which they regret, absolutely is very me and feels very me. So
the bit that I have no tools to deal with and flee in terror from is in fact the most true bit of you.
And it's the bit that, like, people sometimes slightly don't expect, because they're like, oh, Lyd is awkward and a bit too loud and sometimes a bit not understanding faces or things, but is also a flirt, which is wonderful when you have face blindness and a lot of problems with, like, reading emotions, when, like, I've literally, like, flirted with someone one night and had, like, oh yeah, this is going somewhere probably, and then been introduced to them in another context the next day and not realized who they are and just be like, oh hey, with a slight, like, oh, you're cute, and then, like, seen their face fall and they're like, but we met last night, and I'm like, what? Okay, I don't recall. And then I literally need to like explain like that has happened to me.
Mm.
So that's the like navigating the world as essentially a charisma minus one flirt. You know, I really like the idea that sailors had the exact same kind of experiences and that, yeah, that they're still enjoying the world of flirting and romance despite that.
Yeah.
Or because you know, it makes for good stories.
It yeah. does. And I want to leap on there because I didn't actually address what you said, Bryn, which was, yeah, there were definitely points where I was like, is Azu good bi rep? Am I doing bisexuality properly?
Aww.
But the answer to that is also what I'd say to you, Lyd, which is there is no one way of being non-binary or gender fluid or anything like that. Mm. Just like there's no one way of being bisexual either.
Yeah.
Or any sexuality or gender, really. So I am a lot calmer about it now.
Good.
I will say that Azu is a lot. How can I put? Naturally, a lot less complicated than my real life and my real experiences. Lyd, you especially will know. Azu has had a much nicer time than me.
Oh my baby! Oh, you'll be okay. You'll be okay.
I know. I am actually after a year of being inside, I am a lot more comfortable with being alone. Like, I'm barely lonely anymore. But, Azu, I think, would not deal well with this situation at all.
Can you imagine the calisthenics that
she'd be so
Azu would rise to the challenge once it was seen as something to overcome.
Yeah, she probably would. Okay, we're over time. There were still a couple of questions that we wanted to ask, but we are limited by our podcast.
Do you want to do a quick fire? Do we have some quick fire, or are they really nuanced, complicated questions?
They're all like,
define gender. Okay,
okay. Yes, no answer. How does fan art and fanfic influence role playing choices? My answer is slightly, because occasionally I'm like, oh, it can be read like that. That's interesting. Let me keep
that
in mind.
That's not a yes, no answer.
Yes, you're correct. Sorry. One sentence answers then.
I think I try really hard not to let that sort of stuff influence how I play, because I have quite a clear conception of a character in my head and I want to keep playing them according to that. So I would say I try not to, but I think it's inevitable that if you see people reading it a certain way, it will affect it to some degree, just in a kind of, you know, the observer affects the observed effect. But
yeah.
I'd say mostly
because of
no.
quantum.
Yeah, mostly
no. Except quantum.
No, except quantum. Great, love it. Yes.
Ben, I think I know your answer, but what is it?
No, but it's cool that they exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seconded.
I'd say no, except for there are a couple of people that draw Cell really hot. That's been like genuinely, like the people will know who they are, but I actually genuinely have to like make an effort to be like, that I'm not going to go into this thinking of Cell in that frame. Like, even if they are that hot, they don't see themselves that way. So like, you know, they think they're hot. They just don't think they're as hot as I've been drawn into the drawing, which is like hot. And so, you know, I'm getting all flustered, but mostly no. Yeah.
And so Alex? Good.
No, because it's my job to reflect and provide for you as players. I can't do that for the whole world.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That is
short and thoughtful answer, eh?
Just putting us to shame.
Mr. Still
Deep
has
thinker.
Things to teach us.
Well,
he
on
is.
That note,
don't conflate a short answer with a profound one.
No, we're too late. We already have.
Yep.
Yep. Deal with it. Well, on that lovely note, I don't know where this is going to come in the recording schedule, so we're going to say bye.
After the endless season?
Yes. Thank you for finally addressing that on record, Alex. We are at least in season 6 and you refuse...
Look, seasons are a construct that I lie about to make people enjoy them more. But let's be honest here. This is what it is. Just go with it. It's fine.
Oh, there's so much more we could say.
Let's not label it.
Though there's so much more we could talk about. Yeah. Let's do a whole nother one. Just examine forensically, one by one, every pair within every combination of the party.
I would be actually totally up for that.
We might genuinely have to do maybe some like one-on-one deep dives. Like a series of deep dives with individual people.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, write that down, April. Okay. I'm not as good as leading us all to an outro as Alex is, so I'm going to...
Have you heard Alex's outro
I'm
for the main
so
show?
Flawless.
It's all right, we'll awkwardly trail off and then shout bye, and it will basically be like any episode, you know?
Look, it's become a style point of this.
Bye!
Yes. Yes.
Well played.
Perfect.
Oh,
beautiful.
Very nicely done. God, stunning. You are better at this than I am, Helen.
Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. Today's episode was directed by Alexander J. Newell and produced by Hannah Preisinger. To subscribe, buy merchandise, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at The Rusty Quill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Join our community on the Discord or via Reddit at r/rustyquill. Thanks for listening.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun, and see you later.